I want to start by the end of the parsha. Remember the beginning of the parsha? The Jews go down to Egypt and they're slaves and all this, and things are looking very dire. And then Moshe is born and so on. And then God tells Moshe, go and... See, it's interesting, and we'll see this spelled out a little bit clearer as we proceed. There's actually a number of levels to the decrees that took place. Right? You have slavery, and then you have the firstborn being thrown into the Nile. You have... There are levels to it. This is one of the levels. It's one of the last levels. There's one midrash that describes it as being four different levels of slavery, and it describes this one as the fourth. After Moshe and Aaron come and say, "Let my people go," right? You know this? Seen the movie? Yes? Okay, good. Vayitzav paro b'yomahu et hanoksim ba'am ve'et shatrav le'mor. Lo tosifun latet tevin la'am. Lilbon ha'levenim kitmol shilshom. Heim yochu v'koshishu lahem tevin. What does that mean? Paro commands the people, saying, what does Loto Sifun mean? Loto Sifun.
Don't continue.
Right? Yes? Do we all agree that's what it means?
No more Mr. Nice Guy.
It's time for some discipline finally, right? Apparently what Paro is saying is you have too much time on your hands. You want to take a vacation. You want to go off into the wilderness. You want to go serve God. Moshe, by the way, at this point only asked for 3 days, right? Moshe didn't ask to let the people free completely. He asked for 3 days. And he goes, you have time to take a vacation. Obviously, you have too much spare time on your hands. We know that when people have too much time on their hands, they end up getting themselves into trouble. So Paro, who is a good disciplinarian, Paro, what does he say? Fine, you have too much time. We'll give you more things to do. It's no problem. And you will now go and have to collect the raw materials in order for you to make the bricks, right? How do you spell Tosifun? Right, with a vav, not with an aleph. So everything is good except for one problem. It's not my problem. It's the author's problem. And the word is not necessarily what we think it is. What? Yeah, so then what does it mean? Lo Tosifun. Yeah, try, go ahead. Don't gather together. So it's very funny what this word gathering is doing over here. If you look at the Ibn Ezra, he points out, Loto Sifun katuv ba'alef. He goes, this is written with an aleph. V'haminhag liyot bivav. I like the way he wrote that. V'haminhag liyot. I mean, the customarily, we would write this with a vav. Why? Because if you write it with a vav, what's the root? What? Is it Yosef or Nosef?
I don't know.
I would assume that the root is...
No, it's not a pagan.
Oh, good. So no one owns dictics. I can say whatever I want then. We forgot. So did we. But the word to gather, Osef, is not the same word or... Same word of it, that we will continue. No sap. So he says, it's true. Katuv ba'alef ha'minhag liyoto bivav. V'chizkuni writes, lo tosifun aleph lo kri. It's a ktiv, not a kri. Which means it's written with an aleph, but you don't pronounce the aleph. What happens if you don't pronounce the aleph? It means make believe the aleph isn't there. Can you all do that? You make believe it isn't there? What's the problem with that? Because it is there, right? You have a problem making believe it's not there because it is there. So obviously we have a little bit of a problem because we get the general... Shuli, that's why you shouldn't sit near the door. We get the general gist of things, which is that he says, I'm not going to continue. And it's interesting because the asof, to gather, is somehow connected... Right, it is somehow connected with the topic of what's being discussed, namely.
It could be saying it is.
Just one second. Namely, what's the topic? the topic is to gather it together. So, I don't know, is Paro being cute with us? Is he trying, you know? Is Paro speaking with a pun over here?
Is he talking to us in Hebrew?
Is he talking to us in Hebrew? And so why is it written this way and what this means? I get it. So... Okay, so let's just establish one point then. What the Chizkuni tells us, as far as I can tell, is correct. And that is that we have an example over here of a ktiv and a kri, which means... Right, right. But so over here he's telling us it's a ktiv and a kri. Well, the Chumash itself doesn't. I mean, doesn't say it. We have Chumashim that pointed out. And therefore what he's telling us is that Torah Shebichtav and Torah Shebalpeh are not the same on this. And as far as we're concerned, it says it without an Aleph, even though all of us know that it really does say it with an Aleph. So somehow before we finish today, we'll have to figure out why it does say it with an Aleph and what the implication of that is. As they continue and to do it, and we can read it a little bit. Tichbad ha'avudah pasuk tet. Tichbad ha'avudah al anashim v'yasuba. Va'al yishubud v'shaker. Yitzu nogsei ha'am v'shotra v'imur al ha'am le'mor. Ko amar paro. Eineni noten lechem tevin. By the way, if you're Moshe and Aaron, how do you feel at this point? Which really leads us to the very end of the parasha. Moshe does go back to God and say, okay, great. You know, great. I kept saying, I don't want to do this. You sent me anyway. It's all going to work out. But this does not seem to be working out in the way that it's supposed to. And not only have we not gotten towards redemption, things have gone backwards. Things have become more difficult. But let's just continue reading through, because I do want to see what Moshe and Aaron have to say about this within the as it's taking place. Atem lechukhu lechem tevin me'asher temtzu, ki ein negram be'avodoteichem davar. Vayafetz ha'am b'chol eretz Mitzrayim lekoshesh kash the tevin. So all the people then go and they have to start collecting all of the straw in order to make their bricks. And oksim otzim lahim kaluma aseichem dvar yom b'yomo kasher b'yot ha'tevin. Vayuku shotrei b'nei Yisrael asher samu aleihem noksei paro lemor madu lo kelitim chokchem liliban kitmol shoshom gam tmol gam hayom. The Jewish police are beaten by the Egyptians, because they're complaining and saying, what have you done to us? He goes, why are you doing this to us? You give us no more raw materials, and you're telling us to make bricks. And we're getting beat up, and you know, what's going on? In Pasuk Kaf, it says that as they finish complaining, although we're not clear how long, look at your Tet first. Vayirushot Rabbi Yisrael Tambura Lemor Lo Tigru Milivneichem Devar Yom Biyomo Vayifkuu Et Moshe Vet Aaron Nitzavim Lekratam Betzeitam Meit Paro. And then they bump into Moshe and Aaron, and they're not all that happy to see them. And then, of course, in Kafbet, Moshe goes back and says to Hashem, why have you made it worse? Why did you send me? And since I've, in Kaf Gimel, and since I've come to talk in front of Paro, things have gotten worse, and I have not saved the people at all. There's no salvation, things are worse, and so on. And then God sets up saying, chill, right? Take it easy, things are going to get better. Right, right, right. They weren't again. Yeah. They weren't. They certainly were not happy to see them.
Aren't there other places in Tanakh where that word is used?
Which word?
Vayifka'u.
Yes. 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 By Yaakov, we see it. Okay, let's focus now. What we have over here is a promise of salvation. What we have in reality is a worse situation in terms of slavery. Right? How does Moshe respond? How does Moshe take the heat? So all that we're told in the Chumash is as the whole thing plays itself out, we don't see Moshe. Who do we see? We see the Jewish Shotrim who are taking the brunt of this. They're the ones who are trying to serve as a buffer between the Egyptians and the people, which means this new leadership who's come in and promised all kinds of wonderful things, God has come and God has sent us and God is going to take you out. And who's the new leadership? Moshe and Aaron. Moshe and Aaron, as this plays out, we don't see Moshe going down and telling the people, okay, listen, let's organize and let's work together and we'll find some way to do this. We don't see Moshe at all on that level. Rather, you see the Shotrim who are taking the brunt of it. Moshe's not here. And then at the very end, when they even send a delegation to Paro saying, you know, what's going on? We, you know, okay, we're ready to be slaves. We're ready to work. We're ready to do what we have to do. But at least give us the raw materials that we can do what we have to do. And then only then, after they finish doing what they're doing, they walk out and they see Moshe and Aaron over there. And let me, again, phrase it this way. Where was Moshe and Aaron as all this was happening? And the Midrash tells us something which you may find disturbing, but which theologically I think is very interesting. Wheel turning. Everyone's turning. Everyone's looking. Look at source. Look at source 10. Kaven Shagazar Kane, once Pyro made this decree that they have to go themselves collect the materials, Halach Moshe and Lamidyan. Moshe went back to Midyan. Right? Why would Moshe go back to Midyan? Yes, why would Moshe go back to Midyan? Okay. One good excuse would be he has a wife and children there. Kevin Shagazakain Halach Moshe Lamidyan Vasashisha Chodashim Va'aron Hayoshev Mitzrayim Va'otosha Hichzir Moshe Ishto Uvanav. Moshe brought back his wife and children. Where did he bring them to? What? Yeah, so it's not so clear where he... matter of fact, there's two different versions of this Medrash. Exactly. That's what it says. Matter of fact, if you go back a little bit, Moshe and his wife, they were traveling, and that's where the whole thing took place in that hotel, right? The inn. That happened beforehand. And now Moshe goes back to Midian. His wife and children aren't in Midian. His wife and children are with him. So what does Moshe do when this doesn't work? When things go down a little bit, what does Moshe do? Yeah. This didn't work. So what? Yeah, it's not working out that well. So Moshe goes back to Midian, leaves Aaron to take the heat. Aaron apparently is not involved in all this. But by the way, we're told then 6 months later, according to the Midrash, Moshe and Aaron are there ready to approach again. But in the interim, a vacuum of leadership is created and Moshe's not there. By the way, there are Midrashim that talk about that if this happened over here, then this is one of the elements of the messianic process, is that when the Redeemer comes, the Redeemer will be known and clear, and there will be hope, and then things will fall deeper, and Mashiach will disappear, will go into hiding. This is one of the things that a certain part of Chabad bank on when the Rebbe, when they would say disappeared, because they'll say, look, Moshe himself disappeared, you know, right in the middle of the process, but that doesn't mean that it ended right there. It continues, and then eventually Moshe takes them out. So they see Moshe's disappearance, and there is a whole discussion about how long that disappearance is really supposed to take place. Over here, we're told 6 months, that there's others that they claim it's not supposed to be all that long when it takes place in the future. I had a bunch of things on that, and I cut them all out because I didn't think that would interest you at all. There's another thing which does interest me, though. And that is, what is the word which is used to gathering straw? What was the word that it used? V'koshishu lehem tevin. In Pasuk Yud Bet again, v'yifatza'am b'chol eretz mitzrayim l'koshesh kash letevin. What does that remind you of? Right. Okay, now where does the word koshesh work better? By kash or by tevin?
Kash.
Right? That wasn't the hard question. The mikoshesh eitzim is actually doing something strange, because the natural thing to do is to be mikoshesh kash. Do I have to prove that, or that's something which makes eminent sense? It's not too kasha. Source 4, Vayu b'nei Yisrael b'midbar, Vayimtzu ish mikoshesh eitzim b'yom ha-shabbat. Vayikrivu oto hamotzim oto mikoshesh eitzim ha-moshev al-aron v'el kol ha'ida. Vayinich oto b'mishmar ki lo porash ma ya'aset lo. What was the mikoshesh thinking? By the way, one of the things that Chazal point out, it doesn't say koshash eitzim, it says mikoshesh. What tense is mikoshesh? Which means that they tell him stop. It's Shabbos, right? Right? There are Jews that. Would you believe that there are Jews there yelling Shabbos? Yes, there are Jews there yelling Shabbos. And what does he do? He continues. He wants to mikoshesh. He doesn't stop. So what's he thinking? What's going on in his mind? And again, specifically the word mikoshesh is used. What it should have said is that he gathered. What should it say? No. What should Asaf, right? It should have said Asaf. It should have said he gathered. Right? What do you do with trees? You gather trees. There's a whole discussion in the garden. What does it mean, Mikoshesh? What sin did he do? Which one of the Lamatet Melachot did he do? But for our purposes, he's Mikoshesh, which is present tense. He won't stop. He keeps on doing it. He obviously thinks that there's an important message involved in this. And we note the word Mikoshesh. Again, is the word Mikoshesh stranger in this context or in that, meaning in the context in Parashat Shemot, or is it stranger, do you remember which parasha it is?
What does it mean exactly? It doesn't mean gather.
It means gather. It means gather. It means gather. It means gather, but it's a more natural word to use for straw. So. Thank you. Thank you. That's not my fault. That you're more used to it there, but again, I you do appreciate that if anything, it's more appropriate over here.
I think we need them more than me.
Okay, boy, I should cough everywhere. What parsha is that? What parsha is the Mikoshesh? You looked it up. I was so impressed. When does it come up? It comes up after what do the Jews promise? The promise we're going to leave Egypt. We're promised we're going to go to Israel. We're going to promise that the redemption is going to be complete by getting to Israel. And what happens? We have a setback. And the setback is going to be a setback, we're told now, for 40 years. So what? How will the people feel during the setback? Right, then you give up. Then you feel despair. Then you say, forget about it. This is over. What's the Mikoshesh trying to say? No, what's he trying to say? But what's he trying to... No, quite the opposite. He's misguided. See, it's interesting. We're told that he's misguided. We're told that he's superficial. And we're told that he had good intentions. Rabbi Akiva says it's lavchad, and I believe it was Rabbi Yehuda said Akiva atid liten et din. He goes mamanafshach. If you're wrong, then he said lashon hara about this person. And if you're right, the Torah hid it, and how can you reveal it? Tosfot brings a midrash that the Mikoshesh did it l'shem shemayim. Hamikoshesh l'shem shemayim haya. What does it mean l'shem shemayim? So one way of understanding what Tosfot said, and the whole feeling of Tosfot, is that people gave up and said, it doesn't make a difference what we're going to do anymore. You have life in prison. They're all going to die. The whole generation is going to die. You have a whole generation of people who have life in prison. So what do people in life in prison say? It doesn't make a difference what we do. So what does the Mikoshesh do? He breaks Shabbat and shows, it does make a difference what you do. How does it make a difference? If you break Shabbat, you're going to be killed. Now, does that sound a little misguided?
Yeah.
Yes. Which is why we're told he was misguided, he was superficial, he had a point... You've never met somebody who, when they have a point to prove, goes a little far in proving their point? That's the Mikoshesh. He's the ancestor of such people. But if we now recognize the context of what it means to be mikoshesh, or the context of the first time we find people who are being mikoshesh. What's the content? What's the context? What is it telling us? Excellent. And that seems to be what the Mekoshesh is thinking. Don't you remember when we had to start gathering all of the kash ourselves? Don't you remember when we had to start doing all of this ourselves? And we thought it was hopeless. We thought it was over. Moshe was here. Moshe's gone. And then what happens afterwards? And then the slavery ends. And then we get taken out. And then there was redemption. So just because we have a setback, it doesn't mean that the setback that we have now means that we should give up hope. Again, is he superficial? Does he prove his point in an unfortunate way? Yes. But the fact that he chooses this particular method, I think what we're forced to do is to try to connect the two episodes. Okay. No. A couple years, not so far. Not so far at all. The Mekoshesh takes place. This Mekoshesh takes place within a year, because we say all the Makot within a year. It takes within a year of leaving, and the exact same people, the same thing, and it would seem to be that's what's going on through his mind. Which is interesting because none of the Mefarshim pointed out. I didn't notice it. A friend of mine, Rabbi Chaim Tabaski, once pointed out the connection to me. You know Chaim. He once pointed out the connection to me, right? And the Emek Dover is the only one who comes really close in Source 5, because Yeshu Lahem Tevin Yilkutu Kimo Mekoshesh Etzim. They gathered it, and it's similar to the Mekoshesh Etzim, which is very funny, because he's explaining over here, you want to know what it means, Mekoshesh Lahem Tevin, which is dealing with the kach. He goes, oh, it's like Mekoshesh Etzim, when really it's the other way around. By Mekoshesh Etzim, he should have written, it's like over here when they're collecting it to make the bricks.
The trees are really very small trees.
Yes. It's a desert, you know.
What?
It's the desert. It's a desert. Look at Source 7. Sefer Seder Hayom. Seder Sipur Tzim Hatzrayim. ובזמן הגאולה עצמה התחילה שיעבוד יותר ויותר ממה שהיה, וזה שאמר לא תאספון לתת תבן לעם, הם יחו וקוששו, וזאת הצרה הייתה קשה להם עד מאוד, ולא נמר ויקוש את רב בני ישראל, וקדש ברוך הוא עשה לטובותם, שמתוך שיעבדום בא להם גאולתם. Which is something to the effect that it's darkest before the dawn, and that even when things look like they're bleak, sometimes you go a little bit further in, a little bit deeper, and that's just a preparation in order to get. The question that I want to deal with today is why this part was necessary, what the implications of this are, meaning they were already slaves. Okay, why did we need this one more step? What's the deeper understanding of this one more step? Does it really make a difference if they give them the materials and force them to build, or they try to take away hope? Now, if you want to say that what Am Yisrael is supposed to do is, even though they took away the materials and they have to work harder, that they should still believe in God and still believe in Moshe and still believe in Aaron, that's fine. I also find it very interesting in the Midrash that Moshe's gone. Moshe's not there anymore, which is also, the Redeemer is there, the Redeemer is gone. What are we supposed to believe? And by the way, I do want to insist, because of this, there are people in Chabad who can't let go. They say, look, the same thing happened then. So he's obviously he's gonna come back. The Midrashim touch it. they actually see over here an element of Shabbos. They see the family gathering together for Shabbos, and what he's trying to do is to force them to break Shabbos. Now, why would the Midrash think trying to force them to break Shabbos here? Do they really have Shabbos in Egypt? So, again, maybe yes, maybe no. It's a little hard for us to imagine that they're slaves, but they have Shabbos. But it's interesting that that must be part of the thought process of going back to the Mikoshesh. The Mikoshesh is breaking Shabbat by being Mikoshesh. So therefore, if they're being Mikoshesh over here, it must be that they're breaking Shabbat as well. Shabbat is something which gathers people together, and over here, instead of gathering the people together, they're being forced to go into many different directions. If you want to see that, excuse me? If you want to see that, look at source 13. Tichaber ha'avoda al anashim ilamit shahoyu biyadam migilot shahoyu mishta'ashin behem mishabbat l'shabbat. They would sit on Shabbat to Shabbat, and they would have little scrolls with them, and the little scrolls they would learn every Shabbat, which is really trying to take an image, the same way the Jewish families throughout millennia would sit together, gather together on every Shabbat, study, learn, go over the Parsha Shavua. What Parsha did they have? What did they have at this point, which would have been written down in their Megillot? Exactly. What they would have had is the Brit Bein Habitarim, which says you're going to be enslaved, you're going to go down, you'll be there, but you will come out. Which means understanding where they're at in terms of the larger context. You're slaves in Egypt, but that's part of what God said, and you're going to get out. And that's what they read on every Shabbat. So the Midrash over here says, understands that they do have a little bit of time to rest. They do have a little bit of time for themselves. So what happened now? That the Midrash understands over here that they're forcing them not to keep Shabbat anymore. Again, my suspicion is that on some level this is connected back to the Mikoshesh, and it's making a Gzeret Shabbat with the other Mikoshesh, and the other Mikoshesh is breaking Shabbat, and by forcing them to be Mikoshesh over here, they're also forcing them to break Shabbat. And they're trying to take them away from their hope. Let me just show you something if you've already gone that far with this. Look at source 12. Uvi Midrash Rabbah shahayu nochin b'yom ha-shabbat v'nitzlam mehem ha-shabbat. The Midrash Rabbah understands that this additional thing by making them being mikoshesh is that they already had a concept of Shabbat one day off, and now the Shabbat was taken from them. Do'im divrei harav, or Rebbe HaKadosh, Moreinu harav, Rebbe David Milelov. This is the great-grandfather of the Lulav Rebbe. If you've never heard of the Lulav Rebbe, then I would presume you never heard of his great-grandfather either. Lo tosifun ne'emar be'alif. He goes back, I'm in 12. He goes back to the aleph that we had noticed is not supposed to be there. And what is the word tosifun with the aleph? La sofa means to gather together. Lo ta'asifun, you're not going to be able to gather. Nema ba'alef, shehu miloshon asifa, shelo yit'asvu yachad, ki yaldei ha'asifa haya mechazek echad et chaviro. That based upon gathering together, we have strength. We're strength when we're together, we get stronger. But if we get divided, then we get weaker. And that's what happens when you all have to go out in different directions looking for your straw. ולפי הנעל, יש לי טעם בפשיטות מדוע אחרי פעמי גזירה זו עד אחרי שליחות הראשונה. כי באם הייתה גזירה זו טרם שהייתה גאולה שבהעלם, היחס ראשון בלתי יכול לסבול גזירה רעה כזו. ורק כדי שכבר הייתה גאולה בהעלם, הייתה להם התחזקות כל אחד ואחד מעומק לבבו. What he wants to say is that once Moshe came and told them there will be a Geula, that's in their hearts. They know it. They believe it. And Paro is trying to break that, but had Moshe not come by this point, they could have lost it. They could have completely been separated. There are a number of other 19th and 20th century Hasidic writers who all take this idea from Rav David from Lelov, and they all make with slightly different nuances. But for example, normally, when we think about galut, what we think about the Jews being spread out in all kinds of different places. That's the nature of galut. Here we have a galut where the Jews are all together in one place. The Sfat Emet, for example, others they try to claim, is that a galut before the Torah, there's nothing which holds us together. A galut before the Shabbat, there's nothing to hold us together. So in Egypt, you know, prior to this, we all have to be in one place. But afterwards, once we have hope, once we have a Shabbat, once we have these Sfarim which they're learning, now they have something which can bind them together. But that again is what power is trying to break. So as I said, different writers will nuance it slightly differently, but they all are paying attention to that Aleph. They're all paying attention to this idea of gathering together, even though. Well, I'm not going to say it's not what it says. Well, it's not what it says. It's just what's written. Because when we say it as if the Aleph isn't there.
I'm still struggling with the concept of them keeping Shabbat. It's just like...
It's bizarre.
It's like I'm thinking of when we have a Chodesh HaVeh Lachem. When do we have a Shabbat given to them after Yitzhak Mitzrayim? So... This whole concept of Shabbat being Zecher L'Tziat Mitzrayim and then doing it before Yitzhak Mitzrayim
Correct. Again, what's interesting over here is, even though Rav David from Lelov says, oh, you see they had Shabbat, it was taken from them, what did the Medrash actually say they had? The Medrash said they would gather and they had scrolls and they would look in their scrolls and that would give them hope and give them strength. So the same way that Shabbat today gives us strength from week to week by actually resting. It doesn't say they rested, right? It says that they had...
They marked it, that they even had the concept of a seven-day week or something.
Okay, that could be. Look, that would not be as disturbing to the Midrash because that, it can claim, goes all the way back to Sheshit Meibereshit. There's been a seventh day ever since then. Okay, and the same way that Avram recognized that there's a God, that could be. That for the Midrash, is less disturbing. But what I'm saying is, let's recognize... The Midrash speaks on one level, and Rav David from Lelov takes it to a whole other level. What the Midrash did say, there was a Shabbat. That's what it said. Did it say they rested? It didn't say that. They were empowered by the Shabbat. They learnt on the Shabbat. They studied on the Shabbat. They had hope on the Shabbat. It's just one thing it forgot to say. What's that? That they kept Shabbat. That it didn't say. But again, keep in mind that you have as this subtext... You have this idea of the Mekoshesh over here and the Mekoshesh over there. And once you have that as a subtext, then the whole Shabbat issue comes to the fore. Yeah. Correct. 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 Let's change focus a little bit. So far, what do we know? Or what do we think we know? So far, we've noticed the straw. We've noticed that now the straw becomes a part of the story. That's what the mikoshesh is. That's what it means to gather the straw. We noticed that we thought redemption was close. We have a setback. Setback could be devastating. I mean, once you have hope, once you think you're almost there, and that setback, once you think you're almost, you can see the light at the end of the tunnel, and then you lose that light, that could be devastating. Apparently, that's what the Mekoshesh is thinking. When the Jews are so close, they're out of Egypt, they're past Har Sinai, they're on the way to the land of Israel, and that gets shut down, 40 years. Now again, what do you say then? Do you say 40 years all is hopeless, 40 years nothing makes a difference anymore? Or do you say, okay, obviously we were not on a spiritual level to go. Let's use all of our energy to prepare our children so that when they do go into the land, they will build up a place physically and spiritually which will be able to hold on to the Jewish people forever. Or do you say, well, what if it doesn't make a difference anymore and we should have just gone back to Egypt because they had really good fish over there? So again, do you give up? So the Mekoshe says no. there were setbacks in Egypt as well. Look at the setbacks, and that seems to be the context of the Mikoshesh identifying with our story. We're all caught up. How do you say straw in Hebrew? So it's kashrut tevin, right? Where is the first time tevin is written in the Torah? You can start looking there. Where's the first time tevin is written? Yes. Rivka is the first time it's written in the Torah. Source 28. Vatomer elav. What?
Well,
that doesn't mean it's the first time. Vatomer elav gam tevin gam mispo rav imanu gam makom lalun. What's the context? Evid Avraham comes looking for a wife for Yitzchak, and she comes and he says that the test will be to bring food for him and food for the animals, which itself is interesting, which it creates some kind of parallel between humans and animals, which itself I think is interesting. And her response is, I will bring food for you, and I will bring tevin, I will bring straw for the animals. And that becomes interesting, because when you think about tevin and you think about straw, there's something else that's going to come to mind about straw, which is not in the Chumash, but we did discuss a couple of weeks ago. Who is the one who brought up straw as far as Esav? And what did Esav say about straw? Right. So we talked about that Esav seems to think he can do a mitzvah with straw. You can give ma'aseh with straw, right? And who was it? Somebody told me, somebody over here said that he was being very cynical when he said that, right? He said he was being very cynical and very dishonest when he said that, right? And we discussed that a little bit last week. But it's interesting, because the straw of Esav, which again, let's be honest, is on a midrashic level, is actually identified by straw by the performance of a mitzvah, is there in the Torah level when you look at Esav's mother. Okay, so that also, I think, should be noticed. What is straw? Say it again.
Dried up
wheat. It's not just dried up wheat. It's the stalks, which means you have a combination of two different things. Part of it is going to be used for human consumption, part of it can be turned into bread, and part of it is going to be discarded. So what you have, what we call in halakhic literature, you have what's called an ikar and a tafel, where you have something which is of primary importance and something which is of secondary importance or even of non-importance. You have the main thing, which is covered up with something else. And what this can cause you to do is not necessarily to notice the main thing behind it, because you have a confusion between two things. Right? So we have Esav, who focuses on the unimportant, right? Focuses on the straw and not on the food. And by the way, the other thing in the Midrash that he focused on was the salt. Salt is also, it's not the ikar, it's the tefel. Salt is not the primary thing, it's a secondary thing. The main thing is the food. The salt goes on the food to give the food taste, but it's not the food.
The salt makes the food, not the food.
Right. So salt may actually be an opposite example, but it's still not the main thing. Yeah? Okay, very good. Excellent. So therefore, the fact that they have to gather the straw right now, does that give us any indication about what time of year it is as well? Okay? That also is something which the two of us have noticed, and I couldn't find anybody else noticing. Okay? Because that I think is quite important. Okay, so now we're focused.
My question is,
yes.
Any,
what time of the year is it? What did they do the rest of the year when there was no
storm? Well, we don't know how long this lasts. And by the way, does it strike... Okay. Does it strike you that power is going to really care all that much? That right now, apparently, it's the time of year the store is around. So he goes, go do it yourself. Does that necessarily mean that power, you know, 4 or 5 months down the line is going to be, you know, how exactly do they do work this out? That we don't know.
Maybe that's why they had to spread out, because it wasn't readily available, so they had to go and dig it down.
Okay. But it's interesting in terms of the collecting and the asif. That's what's interesting. Okay, so we have many, many things out on the table right now. So let's try to gather them in as much as we possibly can. Look at source 32. This is Menachem Mendel Mishklov, who is one of the main students of the Vilna Gaon. Aval zman v'yetze Yitzchak lasuach basadeh, hu lefnot erev. What does lefnot erev mean? What does lefnot erev mean? So literally it means that it's... It's towards evening. Now, the word Erev, what does the word Erev mean? The word Erev means... It means a combination, or could be a mixture. It's a mixture of what? What is Erev? It's a mixture of day and night, which means you have Yom, you have Laila, you have day, you have night. What do you call the point between the two? You can call it twilight, but that's called Erev. Erev comes, what? Menashevshon. Erev is the time which is a confusion between day and night. Could be. That's between night and day, completely different.
Actually, it's not. There's a crack of dawn. There's no crack of Erev.
Okay. Avozman vayetze Yitzchak l'suach b'sadeh. The time of Yitzchak's spiritual work was when lefnot erev. That means Yitzchak is trying to somehow work out erev. What's erev? Mixture of day and night. By the way, it's very interesting because Avraham is day and Yaakov is night, and Yitzchak is there trying to work out. Yitzchak is there in between, trying to work out this ta'arovet, this mixture. So chapter Madim, I'm going to explain that. Cherish Ashitutz of the Erev. As who sowed Sadeh, Kamashikaz Rav, Riza sowed Sadeh, Avalafnot Erev, Lafnot, La Sir Kolta Arovet, the Erev Rav. Shayam Urav Tevin im Habar. Ubin Sadet Sion Sadeh, Vichin Sadeh Hamachpela, Ubin Sadeh Hamalaki, Viste Edom, Ki Is Sadeh Asher Bichu Hashem, Vi Is Sadeh, the Kol Katula Bichule. V'chein b'zman, v'chein b'nefesh. Should I translate? He says Yitzchak is trying to work out because there's different types of fields. There's types of fields which are blessed by God and the types of fields which have negativity to them. You have the field which is a positive field, and then you have a field like the field of Amalek and the field of, it's really the field of Esav. And Yitzchak is trying to work out the ta'arovet, the mixture, and trying to create a clarification. But he also connects over here the idea of the ta'arovet, which again is the bar and is the wheat and the chaff, and he's trying to work this out together with trying to remove trying to move the Erev Rav as well. What's Erev Rav? It's the people who are mixed in to the Jewish people, which is part of what's going to take place when we leave. Now, let's try to make some sense of this as well. Rivka does a mitzvah with the tevin, with the straw. Yitzchak is trying to create clarity between the mixture. Esav focuses on the straw, and he tries to claim that he can do the mitzvot with the straw. And we know that Yitzchak is somehow very enticed by this. Because Yitzchak finds this clarifying process, this separation process, as being something which is very necessary. We're told as part of the Messianic age that Tevin is absolutely a part of the story. Look at source 14. Zev vitale yira'u ke'echad. The wolf and the lamb shall feed together. Va'aryeh kabakar yochal tevin. And a lion will behave like an ox and is going to eat tevin. What does a lion normally eat? Other animals. But the lion is going to now start eating tevin. And then it continues, "V'nachash afar lachmo lo yareu, lo yashchitu b'chol har kodshi amar Hashem." But the serpent is not going to change its ways, and the serpent still eats the dust, which is taken into, as far as the Midrashim that talk about this. Therefore, focus us that everything can be redeemed, except for the serpent. The nachash can't be redeemed. There's no redemption for the nachash. Everything else can be redeemed, and everything else will be redeemed. And of course, this is the Messianic prophecy. It is stated earlier in Yeshayahu in a more famous formulation, but it's very similar in source 15. V'ger ze'ev, v'gar ze'ev im keves, v'namer im gedi yirbatz, v'egel kfir umari yachtav, v'narkatan nohegbam, u'paravadov tir'eni yachtav, yibritzu yildeim, v'aryeh kabakar yochal tevin. Which means over there as well, in this Messianic age, the lion moving over to Tevin is part of the prophecy and part of the vision. Lots, and that's also part of, the whole Messianic. Straw is food. They do. I googled this. Google knows everything. No. It goes tell us. You grew up on a farm, right?
Close. Field. She grew up in a field. No, the suburban fields that cut down.
A good field. A blessed field.
Apparently animals can eat straw. So
there's hay that we eat. Mm-hmm. This is meant to be kind of
straw hay.
This is not.
What is hay?
Hay is a different kind of straw.
The problem over here could be one of definition of what term you use in English and what term you use in Hebrew. Right. Okay. I actually had the source there from Google. I'm telling you, I had the source, and I cut it out. In my files at home, instead of having like 8 pages, I have like 14, 15 pages. So, but I do have the thing about straw there that I cut out. Anyway. You want to know what hay is? Why should I look it up? Okay. Okay. So, part of the messianic message is how this straw will be used, or the tevin will be used in the future. There is a very interesting passage that I do want to consider or remind you of, and that's in source 29. We'll read it in English because the Gemara over here is heavily Aramaic. The daughter of Kalba Savua betrothed herself to Rabbi Kiva. When her father heard thereof, this is almost English, he vowed that she was not to benefit from aught of his property. Then she went and met. Then she went and married him in winter. They slept on straw, and he had to pick out the straw from her hair, which I think is very romantic. "If only I could afford it," said he to her, "I would present you with a golden Jerusalem." This is Yerushalayim Shel Zahav, which, by the way, it doesn't say in the Gemara. What is in the Gemara? Yerushalayim Didahaba. I would give you Yerushalayim Shel Zahav. That's where this is where the phrase is from, which apparently is some kind of fancy piece of jewelry which they had in those days. But you do notice that Rabbi Akiva and his wife are there with straw. Also, okay, Eliyahu came to them in guise of a mortal, which itself is very interesting that you have Eliyahu Navi who decides to come and visit them and cried at the door, give the some, I don't know,
give me.
Give me some straw, for my wife is in confinement. That means she's giving birth and have nothing for her to lie on. See, Rabbi Akiva observed to his wife, there's a man who lacks even straw. Subsequently, she counseled him, go and become a scholar. Now, this is the background of one of the stories. There's at least two others of how Rabbi Akiva gets involved in learning. But what's interesting over here is that straw is the subtext. Straw is being used. He's using straw for a mitzvah. And you certainly have echoes of Rivka, but you also may have a tikkun of Esav. Because what does Esav want to do? He wants to take ma'aser. What's ma'aser? Fundamentally, what's ma'aser? It's a way of giving tzedakah. Who do you give ma'aser to? Well, it depends. It could be either the poor or it could be the Kohenim or Leviim. So it's very interesting. Moshe is gone in Egypt when they're doing the Mekoshesh over here. Moshe's gone, but who's there still? Aaron is there. Moshe is gone. Over here, you get the strength, you get the sense that something else is going on, and when you then come to the realization that Rabbi Akiva is in reality a descendant of Gerim, or a Ger himself, depending on which version you look at, then you realize, and it's understood that Rabbi Akiva comes from Esav, as disturbing as that may be. Here you have a tikkun of the use of the straw to do the mitzvah. Now, how far does that take us? So let me just go a little bit further. When we notice from the very beginning that the term over here used was with an aleph, right? Tosifun, from the word asaf, asif. There is a holiday which is not, right? Chag Asif is Sukkot. And let's take a look. Source 21, V'chag Shivuot Taseh Lecha B'kurei Ketzir Chitim V'chag Asif Tkufat HaShana. That means there is a time of the year where things are gathered. There is a time of the year actually where the straw is readily available. And that is a holiday which comes up, Chag Asif. And part of what then I have to ask myself is, the Jews are leaving Egypt. What's the story of leaving Egypt? The story of leaving Egypt is leaving Egypt, right? I know that didn't make that much sense, but it's leaving Egypt. That's it. That's the end of the story. Why was there a necessity for another chapter for them to go through this process of gathering together the straw in order to build, you know, why is this needed at that point? And it's also interesting, it's as if to say, we're going to build, and we don't want any help from the Egyptians. Right? It's as if that's what God is saying. You're going to build. I don't want the Egyptians at all involved in it. They're not going to bring you anything. This is your thing to do, having nothing to do with the Egyptians. Now, when I realize that the time of year that this is the holiday of Sukkot, I have to think a second. Read the whole pasuk. Look at Rashi, Chag Asif hu Chag Sukkot. This pasuk has both Shvuot and Sukkot in one pasuk. The Chag Shvuot haselecha b'kurei ketzir chitim. When do you have Chag Shvuot by the ketzira? And then the Chag Asif tkufat hashana. What's Chag Asif? That's Chag Sukkot. Source 23, Dvarim Chag Sukkot haselecha shivat yamim ba'asvecha migorincha. Umikivecha. Bizman ha'asif, Rashi writes in 24, Shata machnis labayit perot ha'kayitz, Dover achar, Ba'asfecha megorncha, Mikivecha, Lamad shemisachichin et ha'sukah, Bipsolet goren v'yekev. That you use the psolet, what's the psolet? It's the chaff, it's the part of the, that's what you use to make the schach. Right? Which means, that what may be going on over here, and I know you're all going to tell me, why do we have Chag HaSukkot? There's two different opinions. One opinion is because of the clouds, the other opinion because they built Sukkot. So guess what? Now we realize that there may be an element right there, before they leave Egypt, already pointing to Chag HaAsif, and I have to stress again, the Aleph is there, dealing with straw, putting it on your Sukkot, using the psolet for a mitzvah, using that which normally isn't used in order to create some kind of a spiritual connection toward to build a sukkah. But to really appreciate this and how this fits within the larger context, then let's think about another thing. And I've said this before slightly differently. We have three holidays. We have Pesach, Shavuot, and Sukkot. Pesach is a holiday which is based upon the past. We should see ourselves as if we left Egypt. Chag HaShavuot is based upon the present. We should see every single day as if the Torah was given on that particular day. Chag HaShavuot is based upon the future. Chag HaSukkot is based upon the future. Chag HaSukkot deals with a future vision of what will take place in the future, which means you have a pasuk in Zechariah, which we read as part of the Haftorah, which you don't have a pasuk like this regarding other holidays. Source 26, the future will come that all the nations of the world will come and celebrate Sukkot in Jerusalem. Now that's fascinating, because you have no source telling you the future is going to come and they're all going to come and celebrate Pesach or Shavuot. But the future includes Sukkot. But it's also interesting because it includes the non-Jews. And Sukkot represents the straw, and Sukkot represents the Asif, but the Asif is collected, and that you had the Tarovet of the Erev Rav, which didn't work out the way it was supposed to work out, which means I can look at leaving Egypt and saying, leaving Egypt accomplished certain things, but it didn't accomplish everything it was supposed to accomplish. What was not accomplished by leaving Egypt? We only had a local redemption. The local redemption is only the Jews were redeemed. Who else was redeemed? A few stragglers on that came with them. But the future redemption that it's talking about is talking about a redemption which includes everyone together. It's also interesting that when we looked at those verses that talked about the lion eating the straw, first of all, you have some sources that say, when that happens, the lion will be kosher. Why will the lion be kosher? Because what is there about all non-kosher animals? All non-kosher animals are carnivorous. The kosher animals, they eat. They don't eat other animals. The fact that the lion is going to go through this shift and go through this change, the lion will become kosher. Let's see if I can find that for you. That's interesting. But I would suggest not taking this too literally. Unless lion tastes really good.
Right.
The verse isn't true. Right. All kosher animals, right? Right. Let's take a look at source 16. Vizev vitale yiru keachad ve'arye kebakar yochal tevin v'nachash afar lachmo lo yiru v'lo yishchitu b'kol har chadshi v'arye midaber kol ha'mikra hazeh b'bitul hara asher b'hatikun de la'atid. This whole verse is talking about the future, the Messianic age. By the way, the author over here is the Leshem. The Leshem was the greatest Kabbalist of the 20th century. He was Rav Kook's Rebbe in Kabbalah, and his name was Rabbi Elyashiv. He's Rav Elyashiv, now his grandfather. So the Leshem writes that this whole verse talks about eradicating evil, which means that the Nachash is not redeemable. Everything else is redeemed, and what you have is the future, the lion being redeemed. Source 18, it's based on Medrash Rabbah, the third line, v'av chayot mitrapaot, in the future not only will people who are ill become healthy, but even the animals will become redeemed, and it quotes this verse. Source 19, Yismach Moshe writes, l'kach nira li daha al piya muvora b'sefer pliya muvan, d'la'atid d'lo yeh ma'achal aryeh rak tevin, in the future when the lion will start to eat tevin, m'meila d'yeh tahor. At that point, it's going to become kosher, because it will no longer be carnivorous, and at that point, it will become a kosher animal. Dehaba atzmuto tahorhu. That in essence, it really is pure. V'hainu v'aryeh kibakar, because it really is like bakar. No, hold it. Let's be honest right now. Lions and ox are not the same. But they said, no, they really are the same. How could they really be the same? They're not the same. So you may find it interesting what the Rambam does with all this. The Rambam says the whole thing with the lamb lying down with the lion and so on. It's all a metaphor. It's people. Look at source 27. Al yaleh alev shebiyemot haMashiach yivatel devar min hago haolam shel olam. Don't think in the future that anything is going to change in essence. Or yesh sham chidush b'maseh bereshit, or nature will change. El olam kimen hago noheg. The world will be here. The rules of nature will not change. And that's what it says in Yeshayahu, that the lamb and so on will live together. Mashal v'chida. It's only a mashal. It's not literal. In Yana Devarshu Yisrael Yoshvim Levetach im Rasha'e Akum Hamoshlim Kezev Namer. The Jews will live in peace with all the nations who have been compared to all of these animals who have been trying to eat us up and trying to destroy us. That is what the Messianic age is all about. It's not about, by the way, you could tell me that's a bigger miracle than the lion lying down or eating the straw, but that this is what the Rambam insists. But I want to go back into the observation that we had, and that is that the holiday of Sukkot is the holiday which speaks about all the nations of the world, bringing korbanot for all nations of the world. The holiday of Sukkot is related to using the psolet in order to create this house, using the psolet, using the straw in order to make the sukkah. What it sounds to me then is that if we look at things, again, on a much, much broader level, I can say that leaving Egypt with all of its wonderful redemption was lacking. Why was it lacking? Because it didn't lead to world redemption. The world is still not redeemed. The world is still suffering. The world still has war and famine and so on and so forth, and nations attacking nations. So therefore, before leaving Egypt, we have one more thing to do. What's the one more thing to do? We need to know how to take the part of the world or the part of nature which we see as being unimportant, we see as the thing which is rejected, we see as being the tafel, and we need to know how to take the tafel and turn this into a mitzvah as well. We need to know how to build with it and how to do something with it, and this will eventually create a holiday which is going to be called Chag HaAsif. And this holiday is going to be about gathering together at that point and using this to build a mitzvah, to build a sukkah, using it to have a place where the Shekhinah can be felt. But all of this is related to the future, which means the holiday of Sukkot is the holiday which is based on the future. And that's why the Pasuk in Zechariah comes back and tells us that there will come a time in the future the nations of the world will all come together and recognize this and recognize God and recognize Israel and come and celebrate the holiday of Sukkot, specifically in Israel. So therefore, when we look at the redemption which is taking place, this is an expression that the redemption is not complete. But just because the redemption from Egypt isn't complete, it doesn't mean that one day there won't be a complete redemption. But in order for there to be a complete redemption, you need, and now it's interesting because it goes back to the behavior of Rivka, and now you realize why she really is a wonderful shidduch with Yitzchak. He's trying to work out the error of the ta'arovet. He's trying to create this ability of creating the holiness even by the mixture or by things which are combined. She's doing the mitzvah with it. He's trying to create the clarity. Esav ends up failing, but we're told that even in the future, there will be people like Rabbi Akiva, and there will be people who are able to use the straw to do a mitzvah. And who shows up when Rabbi Akiva does this? And that's when Eliyahu shows up. Which means all of this is part of the future redemption of when Eliyahu is going to come back, when the world's able to understand about how to use the tevin and how to use the straw and how to use the part which we haven't been able to use properly. And that, to the largest extent, is what the holiday of Sukkot is about. And what I'm then pointing out is, if I'm right in what I'm saying, the holiday of Sukkot then has its antecedents all the way before the Jews leave Egypt, before the Anani HaKavod, before they build the tents in the desert. That's this gathering together over here, because there needs to be a gathering together of all of humanity that will take place. When will this take place? We hope that it will be in our day, but that's what ultimately what the holiday of Sukkot is about. It's a celebration of the future, of using the things which we never really thought to use because we didn't understand how it can be used in the service of God as well. We've gone too far. Yes? Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.